Well, good afternoon and welcome back to the Ramble Room. I'm Ken and I'm here with Diane and Sarah. We have a special guest today. David Iverson, the Cowboy State Politics podcaster, is gracious to join us. Welcome, David.
Well, thanks for having me, Ken.
Delighted. I couldn't think of a more fun thing to do.
Well, neither can I. I mean, it's snowing in Buffalo, so I can't really go anywhere anyway. So I'm delighted to be here, and thank you very much for inviting me.
We're glad to have you. We're going to talk about the U.S. House Resolution 127 having to do with firearms registration. But before we get into that, I think it'd be remiss with us all here together not to mention what happened yesterday with the Wyoming GOP. Their central committee censured Liz Cheney, and the reaction has been interesting, to say
Swift.
The least. Yes. I don't know how many people have had a chance to hear Liz Cheney interviewed after this.
Well, I'm surprised that I still have a television after watching that. But basically, she said that Wyoming citizens really don't know what's going on, and they're wrong. And you know what I took from it was, we're just a bunch of dummies, and she's going to do whatever she wants in Washington, D.C. That's what I got out of it.
Right. And the tone of the reporting about it usually has things to do with it. Can you believe that it only took 11 minutes for them to do this, as if implying that we didn't give it any sort of thought, any consideration? Needs to be brought out that a number, I think it was at least 12 counties, wasn't it, that had done the same thing within their counties?
15. No, all I was going to point out is that it probably took 4 or 5 minutes to read the whole resolution. So there wasn't any debate to speak of. Now, I know that there was some representatives from Teton, and I think they're maybe from Natrona County that spoke against the resolution. But really, it was, we all know what we're here to do. Let's get it done.
Right. It was efficient. Part of what Cheney said in response was, quote, "Foremost among these is the defense of our Constitution and the freedoms it guarantees." And I wonder about the freedoms that it guaranteed to our president having to do with due process. The Supreme Court never heard the case. Before they passed their judgment in the House of Representatives, the case was never presented on both sides. All of the reporting just says, well, these baseless ideas, these baseless concepts and lies, and how he was lying, and they don't go back. If indeed Donald Trump, as president on that 6th day of January, had incited a riot and they had the sound, they would be playing that indefinitely. And you've never heard a lick of what he actually said.
Well, I wonder if they had another constitutional convention over in the next county. I'd be more than happy to loan my copy of the Constitution to Liz Cheney, because she's obviously reading a different one than all the rest of us are.
I don't know how she lives with herself, but if you understand the magnitude and the gravity of what we're saying, she is by definition a representative, and she does not represent anywhere close to the majority of Wyoming people.
No, she certainly doesn't, and she obviously did not represent the prevailing opinion of Wyoming residents. I mean, 73% of Wyoming voted for Donald Trump, and you know, it, like I said before, it would have been different had Liz Cheney come to us and said, hey, guys, I think I really need to vote to impeach Donald Trump. Here's why. We all would have called her nuts. But in the end analysis, we would have said, OK, well, thanks for talking to us, even though we disagree with you. But she didn't do that. She just on her own, she just went ahead and voted to impeach him. And that is what Wyoming citizens are ticked off about.
Right. Not only would she not come to us first, but after it did, and we said, just come explain yourself, she's refused to do that. She was not present at this censure meeting, even to defend herself. And then she comes back out in the lamestream press and talks about how stupid the Wyoming people are, and we don't know what's good for us. And it's just more of that coastal elitism that makes me crazy.
What? You mean Liz Cheney's not actually from Wyoming? Oh, no, surely you...
For those who don't know, she was about 2 years old when her dad went to Washington, D.C. She's been raised there, lived there ever since. Supposedly, she does own some property in around Jackson, which hardly counts as part of Wyoming, at least politically. I don't think she has a clue about what Wyoming is really about, how it operates. She's in her own little tower there, and the people of Wyoming, at least until recently, have been relatively blissfully ignorant, going about their business, thinking that, oh, her name's Cheney, she must be a good egg, we'll vote her back in.
I think as a general rule, people in Wyoming just want to be left alone. And we assume that the people that we elect are going to represent our values. I don't know exactly how you call it, but most people in Wyoming just assume that we elect this person, they're going to go to Congress and they're going to serve our interests. And by the way, leave us the heck alone. And we've been complacent for too long. I mean, it is absolutely imperative that Wyoming citizens start taking an active role in their government. You know, talk to your city elected officials, your county officials, your state officials. I mean, we have to make sure that we're involved in the process so that we can prevent this very situation from happening again.
Exactly. And staying informed is critical. And staying informed doesn't mean listening to the mainstream press or reading most of the local papers in Wyoming. As anybody who's ever been involved in some of the things that are reported on would tell you, that the reports are inaccurate, they are twisted. It takes work, it takes effort to be an informed citizen, and yet we have to do that or it's all over.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you, Ken.
So thank you. When you're right, it's so...
And it's fun to be right.
Yes. Submitted to the 117th Congress in its first session by none other than Miss Jackson Lee from Texas. Sheila Jackson Lee submits House Resolution 127, a bill to provide for the licensing of firearm and ammunition possession and the registration of firearms and to prohibit the possession of certain ammunition. This act may be cited as the Sabika Sheikh Firearm Licensing and Registration Act. I venture to guess that most listeners don't know who Sabika Sheikh was. I had to look her up. She's a 17-year-old high school student from Pakistan who is in Texas and was shot. And it's just more of this, if it would only save one life, if only we had done this before Sabika was taken from us, we could have saved her life. Moving on through the bill, I just want to highlight a couple things, and then we'll kind of go around and get some reactions. The bill says that we will establish, the Attorney General, through the BATFE, will establish a system for licensing the possession of firearms or ammunition in the United States. Can you imagine licensing someone to be able to own ammunition? Each firearm present, they want to know where every firearm is. If you want to loan it to someone, you have to give them notice specifying the identity of any person to whom and any period of time during which the firearm will be loaned to the person, how they're going to store it. You have about 3 months to comply, 90 days after this bill would be passed, if it were passed. The Attorney General shall make the contents of the database accessible to all members of the public. What could possibly go wrong there? Including all federal, state, and local law enforcement authorities, all branches of the United States Armed Forces, and all state and local governments. No one shall be allowed to own a firearm unless they've attained the age of 21 years of age. Now, we can draft you and send you to combat, but you can't own one for your own self.
Well, and once you get back, you'll be disqualified because you'll have PTSD and you won't be
safe. Precisely. They will find that out in the obligatory psychological evaluation, which must be passed by a psychologist of their choosing. All of these things, say, will be determined by the Attorney General. We're giving or proposing to cede a God-given right to self-defense for an entire nation to one person. That kind of smacks of a problem. Additionally, the evaluation is conducted in concordance with such standards as shall be established by the Attorney General. The psychologist must be approved by the Attorney General. This gets really interesting, too, because the evaluation also includes other members of the household, implying, as I see it, that if anybody in your household has an issue, then you would be denied the right to bear or keep an arm or ammunition. They are going to interview the spouse, at least two other persons who are a member of the family, and any former spouse. What could possibly go wrong there? And as that's not enough, there's also listed or any associate of the individual. We'll find anybody we can find who might say something bad about you and grant us the right to deny you last thing that I wanted to bring out has to do with addiction to a controlled substance or alcohol. How many ex-wives might suggest that their ex-husband used to like to throw back a few, especially when he was out?
Oh, I'm sure there aren't any of those.
No. That, again, what could possibly go wrong? And then back when, and just the one thing I wanted to mention about making this thing all public, this database, which includes what firearms are owned, where they're stored, how long you've had it, all of that would be public information. There are a lot of criminals out there who would like to have public information in case they wanted to go pick up a new firearm. They'd know where to go look. The thing is absolutely ridiculous and ludicrous and full of all kinds of issues. David, what do you think?
Well, I think it's the largest wish list of every single liberal in the past 100 years. Every single crazy gun control proposal that has ever been uttered is in House Bill 127. And the problem is that the Republicans can do very little to stop this bill. So in particular, it's always been a goal of the left. In order to exercise their control, they have to confiscate firearms. You know, they have the perfect opportunity to do this. You know, they have the House, they have the Senate, and they have the White House. So if there's any time's a good time as far as any liberals are concerned. So the first thing they absolutely have to do to force you, the American citizen, to do everything that they want is they have to take away your arms. We can look back through history as far back as the English kings, if you want to. And every single tyrant that has ever existed, the very first thing they did was took away people's arms to eliminate armed resistance against whatever hellish, tyrannical act that they wanted to impose on their citizens. And you should make no mistake that the Democratic Party wants to seize your firearms. They absolutely want to do that. And House Bill 127 is all the evidence that anybody needs that is their ultimate goal, to control every aspect of your life. And they're going to start with your ownership of firearms, but it won't end there. So if you look back at Great Britain, when they banned firearms, it didn't end with semi-automatic weapons. It didn't end with shotguns. And right now they're trying to regulate the length of a knife you can own. So once we relinquish any control over our firearms, it really is a no-holds-barred event after that. And it's something that we cannot, absolutely never, ever, ever, ever can give up one inch on the Second Amendment. Because if we do, it is going to end in every proposal that's in House Bill 127.
Right. That's the proverbial camel's nose in the tent.
My first thought when you were reading through all those things was, that sounds like total chaos. Who's putting this together and thinking, well, sure, we can regulate that. Let's just license all the guns and ammunition that's out there among the public. How are you going to do that other than getting people to just come and voluntarily turn them in? Who's going to do that? I don't understand how you would try to put legislation out there, and it's somewhere in your tiny little brain, you're imagining this happening smoothly, and okay, now while we have this database, that's not going to happen.
Well, and you made the point earlier that this is going to become another arm of the government that's going to cost what? How many more people do we need to employ for government jobs to enforce this and handle the money and the information and all of that stuff? So
right. And whatever you start with, you're then going to have their assistance. And the assistants are going to need aides and more money and more bureaucracy. And that's just aside from the absolute unconstitutionality of all of that, which I think is pretty obvious. But just the staggering thought of how are we going to manage this?
Well, I think that we're kind of missing the point a little bit. One of the first amendments to the Brady Bill was to limit the amount of time that the federal government had to okay a NICS check, because their ultimate plan was that they weren't going to issue any valid NICS reports on gun owners. What they were going to do is just, you know, wait indefinitely before they okayed your purchase of a firearm. So one of the first amendments that was passed, and right now the name of the amendment escapes me, was that it limited the federal government to how long that they could sit on that background check. So the whole point with House Bill 127 with all of those things that Ken mentioned, is they're not going to issue any permits at all.
Precisely. True. It's full of all kinds of excuses, whatever they need to deny anybody at any time, not to mention the bureaucratic nightmare of getting all these little T's crossed and I's dotted and all the forms in the right places and all the information verified. It would never happen.
I think to your point of what do we do? That's a very good question. And the answer, sadly, we all know what the answer to that is. What you need to do is stay in contact with your city, your county, and your state elected officials. And I believe that it starts with your county sheriff.
Absolutely.
I think when I listen to all of that, the obviously the first thing that comes out at me is shall not be infringed. And the reason for that is that when you start putting all of these rules in place, like if you have a psychological disorder, if somebody says that you're a drunk or whatever, who decides what those definitions are? And then when you get into which firearms you can even own or not own, who decides what military grade is? And it looks like it's very much, I hate to say pyramid scheme because that's not really what that means, but there's one person at the top deciding what everybody else thinks about what is military grade, what is psychologically unstable. That's a door wide open for tyranny. The other thing that pops out at me, though, is, Dave, you kind of alluded to this earlier. There's this idea that if we could just save one, or, you know, if somebody gets hurt, this can never, ever happen again. And so we have to do something about it. So instead of accepting that life sometimes is just crappy, I guess, we have to somehow legislate things and put things in place so that nobody ever gets hurt ever again. And again, that opens the door to tyranny.
That's the ultimate liberal canard. That if we could just save one person, then it's worth it.
Right.
The truth is that liberty fundamentally is dangerous. If we're going to have the freedom to own firearms, well, then there's a possibility that somebody's going to shoot you. That is the price that we pay to have liberty. You know, those who would trade, you know, essential liberty for a little temporary safety deserve neither.
And they'll get neither.
Yeah, and they'll get neither. But the essential point here is that liberty is dangerous, and it goes across the board, not just with the Second Amendment, but let's just kind of expand that to the First Amendment for just a moment, if we could. You have the freedom to say anything that you want. Now, that doesn't mean that you have the freedom to not have your feelings hurt. It doesn't mean that you have a freedom to be immune from hearing things that you don't like. The First Amendment exists so that we have more voices rather than fewer voices. Now, as it relates to the Second Amendment, the right of everybody to keep and bear arms means that, yes, there are going to be firearms available. But if you look at Wyoming, the reason why the crime rate is so low in Wyoming is just about everybody you walk by on the street is packing a gun.
Either that or they're your cousin. You don't want to knock off your cousin.
Well, sorry. That too. But, you know, you brought up an interesting point on the word infringe. What does that mean? On my program, I am a stickler about definitions because, quite frankly, that's the only way that we're going to beat the liberal argument is if we pin them down on exactly what they're talking about, because they are masters of changing words. So I just so happens that I have a dictionary here. Weird, I know. So let me just read to you the definition of what infringe says. It says, to fail to observe the terms of, to violate, to encroach on, or to trespass on. Now, in Wyoming, we have a different view of what the word trespass means, and it goes way back in our history. Frankly, if you step one foot on my property, that means you're trespassing. So if there is one foot, you know, placed upon our constitutional rights, that is, the one we're talking about is the Second Amendment. But if you place one foot on the Second Amendment, you are trespassing on it. Therefore, you are infringing on it. So the Second Amendment doesn't have anything to do with compromising or anything. It says what it says, and it means it. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, period.
Well, and to use that analogy, if someone sets foot on your land and you don't know what their purpose for being there is, you say, well, they're not really hurting anything, but now they're on your porch. And you say, well, I don't really know what their goal is. Maybe they just want some of the apple pie I just baked. And now they're in your living room and you still don't know what they're doing there. And then pretty soon they're hurting your family or whatever. The whole idea is you don't get to set one foot on my land without being invited because I don't know what you're capable of. I don't know what your end game is, and I'm not willing to risk that.
Exactly.
Goes for the First Amendment as well, and it should go for the Fourth and the Tenth.
Well, pretty
well,
much all
of them. Well, it goes for the entire Constitution,
yeah.
But
yeah.
You know, like I said earlier, I think these Democrats were attending the Constitutional Convention over in the next county because they're certainly not reading the same Constitution that I am.
Well, speaking of the rest of the Constitution, there's also a thing called due process, and maybe you could look this up in your dictionary too, but the idea is that people are innocent until proven guilty. And when I keep hearing about this bill and databases being formed, collected, created, whatever, it reminds me very much of, you know, the registries for sex offenders. But those are people who have already violated the law and are now labeled as such so that people...
Been convicted.
Yes, been convicted and found wanting. So that now people know what they're dealing with. But this bill is talking about infringing and imposing these things on people who have never broken the law.
It's denying a God-given right. It's hard to believe that anybody would even see any way that this could be remotely constitutional.
You know, due process, that's probably one of the, well, they're all of the amendments are important, but specifically due process. Let's look at the police for an example. It is not the job of the police to prevent crime. That is impossible. Rather, it is the duty of the police to investigate and prosecute crime, that is, after the fact. So when we look at due process, we presume that people are innocent until they're proven guilty. To presume means that we just accept it as a fact until we're proven wrong. And what House Bill 127 does, just like every other gun control measure that's ever been stated, is that we assume that legal gun owners are criminals, and that's why we have to take their guns. And the only way that you're going to do that is if you presume that every legal gun owner in America is going to commit some horrible act with their gun, and that's just not true. So you're right in that all of the amendments to our Constitution work in concert. You know, we can't just sever one and think that it's going to be okay. They all work together. You know, the First Amendment is your freedom of speech. The reason why the Second Amendment is listed second is the second protects the first. And then as you go down the line, all of them build on each other to create this incredible document that illustrates all of our God-given rights. You can't have one without the rest of them.
There's one more aspect that occurs to me, and that is the idea of safety. When only the criminals have the guns and we can't defend ourselves against that, the only thing we can do then is turn to the authority of the government. And the only way that this government can respond is through heavy-handedness and tyranny. There's no other way to attempt it. And as you begin to think through the process logically, there's no question where this would go. You have the haves and the have-nots. You have the elite, I like to call them the coastal elite, and the rest of us. I don't see how anybody who has ever thought about it at length could deny that, including those people who think of themselves as the elites. And there is the really frightening part in my mind.
There's a principle I use on my show. It's called the Harms Principle. This kind of John Stuart Mill, who is probably the father of American libertarianism, came up with it. And basically, it says that the only acceptable use of government force is to prevent harm to another person. Now, government force comes in a lot of different forms. I mean, there's the military, there's the police, taxes. There's all manner of different kinds of government force, but the only time that it's ever justified is to prevent harm to another person. And when you apply that to a lot of the proposals that are coming out of the Democratic Party, they proceed from a false assumption, and that is that they can make you safe. The truth is, the only person that can make you safe and have any success at it is you. We can't depend upon the government to provide safety because that's impossible. So the only person that should be entrusted with your safety is you, which is why in the Heller decision, the Supreme Court ruled that you do have a fundamental individual right to keep and bear arms to protect yourself. It's not the job, nor is it the capability of the government to protect you.
Well, it's not just the government anymore. It's also these big tech corporations who are doing us a favor by reevaluating the First Amendment and saying that if you say something that might be offensive, it could cause somebody else to overreact and possibly hurt somebody. So now we're being protected by the government as far as our Second Amendment right, and we're being protected by big tech to make sure that nobody gets their feelings hurt and nobody incites anything that might end up getting somebody's knee scraped.
But there again, if you apply the harms principle to it, we're talking about actual harm. That is, maybe preventing me from punching somebody in the nose. Okay, that would be actual harm. But there's no acceptable use of government force to prevent things that we think might happen, which is exactly what House Bill 127 does.
My point earlier is I don't think the people that are trying to push this are unaware of the principles, the harms principle, and the ideas that you brought out. I believe it's deliberate. I don't think they can keep people safe. But they're using that propaganda to try to get more power, more leverage, more control.
So they might not be able to keep us safe, but they can keep us under control.
Yes, and part of the problem is that, generally speaking, most people are ignorant. Now, I don't use the word ignorant in a derogatory manner. I mean,
right. They simply
ignorant
don't
by
know.
Definition. Exactly. They don't know. And for so long, we as Americans have relied upon the media, and now it's social media, to give us our facts. And frankly, folks, that doesn't cut it. You know, George Washington, in his farewell address, said that the only way a republic can exist is if you have an informed and profoundly religious populace. Now, being informed, that's the number one thing that people have to do. You have to be educated on what all your legislators are doing. Now, at the state level, there's a lot of things that are going through Cheyenne right now that radically affect people's lives. And if people don't get off their hind ends and call their legislator and write letters and get involved, well, those things are going to come to pass. And one of the only things, that's about the only thing that we can do as citizens, is to stay on our elected officials and say, you know, here's the line, representative. You know, you can come up to it, but this far, no farther. But people have to stay involved. And that's the number one thing that you can do. Not that long ago, I interviewed a guy named Mark Russell. He's an incredible guy. But what he does is he does kind of like some corporate training, and he holds a lot of events to get people jazzed up about getting involved in their local community. He said that on average, each U.S. congressperson, both House and Senate, on average, they get between 7 and 10 letters on each piece of legislation. That's it.
Okay. Then let's talk about SF-81, the bill. In Wyoming legislature right now, called the Second Amendment Preservation Act, because this is a bill that is specifically designed to counter any federal infringement on our rights in the state of Wyoming. So Wyoming is saying, you can't do that, and if you do, we're not going to enforce that here. You're not constitutionally allowed to do these things to us, and so as a state, we will stand against you if you go ahead and try.
It's a Second Amendment sanctuary.
Yeah, it's built upon the principle, well, not principle, but along the same lines as legalized marijuana laws. Now, it's a federal crime to possess marijuana. Yet we have several states that have pretty much told the federal government to go pound sand that marijuana is okay in our state. So that same principle holds true as far as the Second Amendment goes, that the state can nullify federal law and say, hey, here in Wyoming, we're not going to enforce your crazy gun grabbing scheme.
Right. And so maybe one of the things we want to make sure we slip in here is that if you go to yoleg.gov and look at current legislation for 2021, and then look up SF0081, Second Amendment Preservation Act, you can go read the whole thing, and it's not very long. I think when you print it up, it's only about 4 pages, maybe. At the top, you have tabs. One says Bill Text. That's where you read it. Status. Has it been passed? Has it been voted on or anything? Are there any amendments? There is the last tab is for commenting. So if you click on that, you can comment. You can say, I'm for or against this bill. At the top of the text is also the senator who sponsored it. The co-sponsors, there's an entire list of people who are sponsoring the bill. And when you go on to comment, you need to know at least the representative district that you're in or the Senate district that you're in. You can just click, I support this bill or I don't. And then you have you can say a few words about how you feel about it. But this is something that people need to do. Contact the people involved in this and say, we're with you. You know, help us preserve our Second Amendment rights in Wyoming.
Well, to make it easy, I'll post a direct link right on the front page of cowboystatepolitics.com. So you can just go to the website and it'll be right there, one click, and you don't have to do any searching for it. One thing that I think is super important to point out is that in the last 5 years, there have been numerous gun bills that have failed in the Wyoming legislature for varying reasons. But this bill, or a version of it, failed last year, and it only failed by one or two votes. So if you're listening and you think that, well, this is Wyoming and everybody supports guns here and this will pass no problem, you can't make that assumption, because there are liberal red-coated Republicans in Cheyenne that will vote against gun legislation. The only thing that we can do to make sure that our elected representatives hear us is to contact them, call them, be an informed voter, and stay on their tails, because this is something that absolutely has to pass. And quite frankly, it's a disgrace that it hasn't passed in Wyoming yet. I mean, we are the most conservative state in the country, and this thing should already be law, but it isn't. So this year we need to make darn sure that it does become law.
Right. And I think that maybe in the past year that many people have had a wake up call to the fact that we can't just sit here and say, this is Wyoming, this could never happen to us. You can see that it already is. And a lot of things that didn't seem possible 12 months ago suddenly look like they're right around the corner.
That's one thing that has bugging me terribly all through this COVID thing was I felt like Wyoming is the most conservative state in the nation. We should be leading the charge to combat anything that infringes on our rights. And yet we haven't been. And I think it's because we're full of conservatives, and conservatives by their nature kind of stick to themselves and stay out of some of the other stuff. But like you said earlier, freedom is dangerous, and that's because it's hinged on personal responsibility. And the other thing that has been bugging me is that when we talk about Liz Cheney, everybody wants to make her the bad guy. Liz Cheney's just doing Liz Cheney's thing. The problem is not with her taking advantage of what we've given her. The problem is what we have given her, which is our leniency and our apathy and our inability to stay informed and stay involved and stand up for ourselves, so that carries from a local level to a state level and from a state level to a national level. Wyoming should be leading the charge when it comes to fighting against anything in the federal government that is trying to impose on our rights.
I think that's an excellent point.
Well, thank you.
Well, you're right. Because with freedom comes responsibility. And we, frankly, like on my show, I like to call a spade a spade. So we elected a carpetbagger, and we knew it. The only way that Liz Cheney got elected is because of what her last name is.
Right.
And we're the ones that voted her in. Now, that doesn't mean that's not something that we can change. Oh, we can most certainly change it in the next election. And I think that that's probably going to happen, or that it ought to happen. But yeah, you're right. You know, as a citizen, you absolutely have a responsibility to be engaged. And that's frankly the only way that a republic is ever going to work.
I think I've heard that before somewhere.
You may have.
Well, I think we've pretty well covered that, and I appreciate everybody being here. If you are interested in anything that David has had to say, you need to hear more of what he does. He's at cowboystatepolitics.podbean and also at cowboystatepolitics.com. Is that correct?
Yeah, the easiest way to listen to the podcast is actually to just go to the website. All of the shows are right there on the front of the on the front page, and you can listen to all of them right there. But I really appreciate you having me on. It was a great discussion, and you guys are welcome to come on my program anytime you would like.
We'd like to do that. One day we'll be good enough.
Oh, now, come on. We had a great discussion.
We did. We're still learning it for those that couldn't be here before the show started, which is anybody listening to this. We had some technical issues trying to get technology on our side, and big tech seems to be opposed to us at every turn. At any rate, I appreciate your being here. Any closing thoughts?
Just a couple of them. You know, we talked about a lot of different things here, and all of it boils down to citizen engagement in the things that really do make a difference in their lives. And as a people, we tend to think that, well, once the election's over, my job is done. Well, the reality, guys, is that most people don't get the job done on election day. You know, we're blessed in Wyoming that, you know, we generally have a pretty high voter turnout, but we stink after election day. Like we mentioned a couple times on the program today that, you know, we really don't try to keep ourselves involved in what's happening on around us. And the time for that is over. You know, if you don't want crushing government mandates in your life, you need to stay in touch with your local representatives, with your state representatives, because all politics really is local. And if you want an example of that, just look to the vote that happened yesterday. The Johnson County committee man effectively reversed the vote of the Johnson County Republican Party all by himself. So that's a local thing that, quite frankly, we're going to deal with locally. But one person from Little Buffalo, Wyoming, had a voice at the state GOP and was able to cancel the vote of an entire county. Okay, so all politics is local. So it's not just your representatives and your senators that you need to stay in touch with. It's all of them, your sheriff, your city council people, your county commissioners, all of them. You need to be involved and you need to be educated on what's going on in your life.
We need a great awakening.
Yes, sir, we do.
Thanks for the time that you spent with us. I enjoyed it a lot, and I look forward to some more in the future.
Yep, I had a great time. Thanks a lot, guys.